At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
On the hunt for lost ROI? Chart a course and find hidden profit potential with Acuron Corn Herbicide. It's the only herbicide strong enough to bury competing weeds and help you unearth 5 to 15 more bushels per acre. How's that for hidden riches? Uncover the real value of Acuron at Acuron-Herbicide.com. Acuron is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a one. Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
It's leftist ideals without more the like sensibilities of like the DNC or like other leftist groups, where it is a more like sense of like civility and politeness. Like the one, like the dirtbag left never said Trump is ruining the sanctity of office, because the dirtbag left thinks that is sitting around in someone's apartment drinking PBR, smoking American spirits, saying there is no sanctity in office, and the burger party is the funniest thing that's ever happened in the history of politics.
Yeah
That was a lot of references I didn't catch.
That's okay. Can you speak into the microphone? Yeah.
Is that too close?
No, that's fine.
Okay, cool.
I'm just letting you know, this makes it really hard to hear and really hard to edit.
I'm so sorry.
Right here, thank you.
Okay, cool.
Donald Trump had a bunch of like high schoolers, college students?
High schoolers, I think.
High school. They're like the best football team in the country. And so the tradition is they go and they get a dinner at the White House. And he had McDonald's and Wendy's and Burger King all put off in like fine china. And I'm finding a picture. It's the funniest fucking picture, because like he could have just did one. That's what always gets me, is he could have just been like, we're doing McDonald's. But he said, what if they like Burger King? And so he got like options for him.
Okay.
And a bunch of people were mad. Like, this is ruining the sanctity of the office. And we're like, no, this is the funniest thing that's ever happened. Burger party Trump.
I think neither. I don't think it's that funny. And I don't think there really is sanctity in the office.
Here we go.
Well, that is so funny.
It's so funny. There's Burger King, there's Wendy's.
This was first election, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, like that was when like the leftists peak on like Twitter. Like everyone's active on Twitter.
Okay.
I'm getting almost arrested for protesting. But I run really fast.
I don't know if Harrison's mentioned this to you, but one of the things that really bothers Harrison about my age is whenever he remembers that when he voted in the 2016 election, I was in the sixth grade.
Yeah. See, that's a big remembering. That's how I recognize how old I am, because people are like, I was like in middle school when Trump was elected, and I'm like, I was living in an apartment and I saw Pennsylvania flip, and I went,
yep,
well, that's true. It.
And exactly.
So I lived by the Flint's tires.
Yep.
I walked down 59 to 101 bottles, just started drinking.
Hell yeah. I was freshman year at the top of the honors dorms, and we were watching the results, and I saw Pennsylvania flip, and then saw everyone else around me hold on to some kind of hope, and it truly went, I'm going to bed. Like, I know. It happened. I'm going to bed. He won Philly. That's all that. Well, he didn't win Philly specifically, but he wants Pennsylvania.
And I was studying the Roman Empire in middle school.
So,
talk about Jennifer's body. That'll lift your spirits.
Yeah. How did we go the entire episode and not mention the soundtrack?
I mean, there's just so much good stuff in that movie.
That, and we barely talked about the movie because purposefully, not like normally where we barely talk about the movie, where I feel like I'm reeling you in all the time. No, purposefully, we barely talked about them. Have you listened to the Jennifer's Body episode?
I made sure I listened to it for this.
Hell yeah. Yeah. It's so good. This is a top three soundtrack for me.
What are your other top two?
School of Rock. And School of Rock is the the School of Rock soundtrack is the first album I bought with my own
money. I want you to know I was trying to find some good reference pictures of you on Facebook for something we're doing in the future. Uh-huh. And I was going through, and then at a certain point, it just becomes a bunch of School of Rock, and I was so weary.
Basically, the soundtrack of Jennifer's Body. Have you listened to the soundtrack of Jennifer's Body?
Yes.
Okay. It was basically whatever Fueled by Ramen was doing in 2008.
Like, it's really a good year.
Yes.
We were a country.
It was it has a new perspective, the first Panic song post-split, which kind of showed that there was still gas in the tank for three more records.
Well, they only made one.
They made five.
They made A Fever You Can't Sweat Out.
And then they remade A Fever You Can't Sweat Out. And then
that after the split?
After the split, they remade A Fever You Can't Sweat Out. And then they...
Then it was just Brendan Urie, right?
And then they did the other great weirdo record. And then they remade A Fever You Can't Sweat Out with Death of a Bachelor.
No.
And then he made two records that don't exist.
Death of the Bachelor is not anything close to Fever.
It's such a vibe. It's the same vibe as
Fever. No, Fever is like more traditional. Like OA, kind of like emo, where like Death of a Bachelor is Brendan Urie singing about being getting a marriage for like an hour. I like the record. It's the only Brendan Urie record I like.
Same.
It is mostly him being like, I'm gonna be married for like an hour.
Yeah. Vices and Virtues, Too Weird to Live, Too Rare to Die, and Death of a Bachelor, I kind of view as a trilogy of Sarah Smiles to The End of All Things to Death of a Bachelor. Like, it is him, like, the last of his single days, the transition of him being a married man, and then it's life as a married man.
There's only two Brendan Urie era songs that aren't on Death of a Bachelor that I ever listened to. They are perhaps the most obvious things, I guess. It's almost to the point of parody that these are the two I listen to.
Ballad of Mona Lisa?
Yeah. I'll give you a hint. Uh-huh. It's not on that record, the next one.
It's on Too Weird?
Yes.
Is it one of the singles?
I don't know what the singles are.
Okay. Vegas, there's Vegas Lights. Here, you're free to jump in.
No, it's okay. So far, everything we've talked about, I have bad opinions on, so I've just been letting you guys talk.
No, please, give me your controversial opinions, because I'm going to have one about this movie. So, go for it.
Oh, wow.
I like this movie. It's fine. It just exists.
We'll get back to that later.
Exactly. I truly feel like I'm going crazy.
I don't hate that opinion.
Okay.
We'll get back to that. Well, the only Panic at the Disco album I do really like.
Nicotine.
The only Panic at the Disco album I do really like is Death of a Bachelor. I think I think other songs split throughout the other records are better, but I think that's the one that I can listen to and be like, yes, this is diverse enough.
You don't like Fever?
I mean, I like it, but most of the songs on that record sound the same to me.
Insane. My ranking is a little controversial also. It's Pretty Odd, Too Weird, Fever, Vices, Death of a Bachelor, and then the last two records don't exist. So.
I mean, to be fair, that's only albums. His top rated piece of Panic at the Disco is, I don't even know it. I can't even do this joke. Tyrannosaurus Rex.
What?
T-Rex.
Pretty odd. Oh, Tyrannosaurus Jazz is what you call it.
The worst song.
Pretty odd? Oh.
No, the worst song. The breakup sex in the middle of a makeup.
Oh, it's called Middle of a Breakup.
Yeah.
It's literally called Middle of a Breakup.
Worst song I've ever heard.
It's bad. I don't like really any of that record. I think the title track is like, oh, this is good, and then the rest of that record,
it sounds like AI made it.
It a little bit does,
or at least wrote it.
It feels like AI, someone put the last two Panic records into AI and none of the rest of them when they were a diverse band, and when it wasn't just Brendan Urie being Brendan Urie, and then just made a Panic
record. Always wanted to be Adam Lambert, and he just wasn't.
He wanted to be Freddie Mercury, yes.
I would like to say that my favorite Panic at the Disco song is the Ballad of Mona Lisa, and it's not even close. So maybe that saves me a little bit.
I mean,
that saves me in my estimation.
Ballad of Mona Lisa rules.
Yeah. It's an awesome song.
Yeah, Vices is a great record.
It's good. Okay. I enjoy listening to it.
That's my...
Well, yeah, your strongest political belief is that we should shoot Brendan Urie. That's the first thing you say to me every day when you walk into my apartment. You go, fuck, if I wasn't doing this podcast, you know what I'd be doing? And I'm like, shooting Brendan Urie.
It is really nice to know, though, that even at the very end, he was in touch with his Warped Tour roots. Because the moment the band turned 19, he wanted nothing to do with it.
Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week one man shows another man a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen. As always, I'm your usually the one that gets the final line in, but Harrison's on fire today. Host Matthew Olenchek, joined as always by my beautiful work husband and future Brendan Urie assassin, Harrison Poole. How are you, babe?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. This week we decided, you know, we tried getting women in, and this week I saw the Rizzler in a hotel.com ad. So I said we should get the youth vote. Joining us here today in his suspenders and propeller hat is local hooligan.
It's the boy.
The boy with the slingshot in his back pocket.
Am I the first Gen Z guest you've had on the show?
Probably. You're also the first guest who went from bleeped name to unbleeped name to officially guest on the pod.
You're definitely our first guest who didn't see the towers fall.
Yes.
Oh, fuck.
Don't worry. The next two guests also didn't see the towers fall.
Okay.
My brother exists because the towers fell.
Geneva's the youngest?
Geneva's 99, so she was like right before the towers
fell.
Joe is the youngest.
Before Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Before Joe, Geneva's the youngest.
Because then it was Jen, okay. And Brandon, yes. And Mel are older than me.
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah, you're the youngest guest and likely the youngest guest we'll have for a minute.
I wasn't a good pick for that. I'm a little weird by my generation standards.
That's all okay. Of them are.
Yeah.
I've read 20 articles about the Gen Z stare recently.
I don't care. Not that you've read 20 articles. I don't care about the Gen Z stare. I don't.
What's the Gen Z stare?
So apparently in customer service, when someone asks a question and a Gen Z person thinks it's an obvious dumb question, they just stare. It's rather than answer or be helpful, they just kind of stare at you like you're stupid, and you kind of are.
Sometimes it is just a moment. I don't have this problem at where I work now, but when I worked fast food at Dairy Queen, sometimes it was a problem where they're like, hey, is there cheese on this cheeseburger? And it's like, okay, you sort of need to take a minute, because it's like, how is this person asking me this question? Yes. Are they being serious?
That is what is happening.
I'm not trying to be rude. I just need a second.
Oh, I just assume they're idiots. When I worked at the diner, I had a guy come up to me. He's like, what's the name of your restaurant? And it's the only time I ever got caught off guard. I didn't stare, but I was like, what? And he's like, what's the name of your restaurant? I'm like, another broken egg? He's like, yeah. So why are there eggs in the menu? And I'm like, there's eggs in every dish, sir. And he's like, no, I just want plain eggs, plain bacon, plain toast. I'm like, it's right there, sir. He's like, you need to tell your manager to either change the menu or change the name of the restaurant. We're a corporate chain. Because there's no egg. That place down the street, there's a line outside right now. There's no one in here. I'm like, this is an upscale, bougie brunch place. It is Wednesday on a 3 p.m. Everyone else is working. You're here because you're old and retired. And that's some Italian guys yell at me for being too thin.
Right. I do have a question.
Yes.
So we talked about the Jennifer's Body soundtrack for maybe a total of 3 minutes. Are we satisfied with that?
I mean, it rules.
He really just needed it on record.
I just needed it on record. That's going to be the intro to the episode, just so we're aware.
I mean, that's fine.
I didn't need to go. I can go in depth on every single song on that record.
They're all good songs. I added a couple to my playlist when I listened to it, so they're all good songs.
New Perspective is one of the better Panic songs, period. It's also Brendan Urie at his... It's Brendan Urie at his most arrogant in a way that is kind of charming before it became annoying.
The one thing I can improve it, I don't think I remembered me. There isn't an All-Americans Reject song.
I don't believe so. There is an all-time low song.
They should have put
All-American Rejects
every movie that time period, and this is my strongest opinion, my strongest political belief, is that every movie from that period needs
an All-American Rejects song.
Dirty Little Secret.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Get off TikTok.
Because I'm
not on TikTok. I'm pulling up the soundtrack, Matthew. Okay. I'm referencing the thing we're talking about. Is that too loud? Sorry.
This is a little loud.
Always on their fucking phones.
Jesus Christ.
You know
dude.
What?
Oh my God. Are you okay? I had you on 5.
I'm so sorry.
That's okay.
I'm so sorry.
It's fine.
We're hampered by not having an actual radio
producer. Yes.
So if I start yelling at Matthew again,
a movie
or
mic
pull
away,
the microphone yeah, away yeah, from yeah. my face.
Yes.
That is what I do. All right. Awesome.
Yes. Whenever I get really annoyed with him, the microphone is here. I am annoyed at you. Like, yeah.
Okay. Okay. That's good to know.
We're hampered because we had an actual soundboard set up. What you do is when someone gets really loud, you just turn them down.
Yeah.
And then you can turn them back up. And sometimes you don't turn them down fast enough and they say they're having a fucking stroke. And that's on live television over an ad for the Portage County Foster Children Program. And then we get a letter from like a bunch of people in government, and it becomes like then he gets super embarrassed, feels bad about it, and then we do like the TV 2 awards at the end of the year, and that's like the only thing we show during the bloopers. Because he was having a rough night. Because normally he's always good. Normally he's always on fire, but he's just having a rough night. Unlike Taras, who is from Russia, perfect.
Yeah. Yep.
I'd do sound check and he'd be like, hey, so I'm like, you don't need to talk, Taras. As always, you're fine. Also appreciate him because he's like, I'm getting old because I need my glasses through the teleprompter because I hate this. But he's kind of fumbling through his lines, cuts to his co-anchor. You can see he's like sweating. He's like, so he gets to the end. So at the end, what happens is the sound goes down or sound goes up on commercial, sound goes down on them. Then we're like, okay, you're good to talk. We're good. We're clear. So I'm turning up the sound of the commercial. It's like, adopt a child. They need you. And then he just goes, God, I'm having a fucking stroke tonight. I go, fuck. I just mute every mic in this studio. And we're like, oh. And then everyone's like freaking out. I run out there. I'm like, the mics were hot. And he goes, no.
Wait, was this on a radio?
This was on the TV2 station at Kent State.
Were you allowed to say?
No.
No, of course not.
Okay. You're allowed to say bitch, okay. Damn, ass, and hell. That's the radio rules. I don't know about the TV2 rules.
That makes sense. Do we want to talk about the movie?
I mean, we can. Sure. Okay,
is this a little early?
No, it's fine.
Do you guys usually bullshit for longer?
No, I mean, you listened to the episode.
I know. Those are edited.
So
there's a lot cut out.
Before we start, we'll talk about the movie. I do want to apologize about how much boat was in this movie.
Yeah.
Are you afraid of the water?
I can't swim.
He doesn't like boats.
I don't like boats. Every time I'm on a boat, I'm thinking, what if this boat capsizes? I will drown.
If it makes you feel any better,
I don't need to be made feel better. I don't.
Truman agrees.
I'm fine. I have a very rational fear.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah, no, you're right.
I'm afraid of drowning. I can't swim. I'm going in a boat this Sunday. It's going to be hell.
Okay. I've never understood it when people say they can't swim, because if you just move your limbs, you're going to stay afloat.
I took 10 years of swimming lessons. Everyone's like, floating on your back's easy. It's not. If I get into the water and I try to kick my legs go down and then I sink. I have almost no body fat. So much like the chimpanzee, I just sink. It's an incredible hassle. I'm not buoyant in any nature.
Have we confirmed you're not actually a chimpanzee?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to make sure we've confirmed that.
I've never ripped a woman's face off, and I don't like bananas.
Yeah, I just wanted to get that out of the way.
Originally, I was going to be like, well, we can try to talk about the plot of the movie. But then I thought about it and I was like, the plot is basically the same thing happening for an hour and a half. And then he leaves. Yeah, so we don't even need to talk about that. Basically, Truman is living. Do you want to talk about it?
No, go for it. It's a TV show.
It's, yeah.
It's, you guys know those 24-hour lifestyle streamers now?
No.
What if this was in 1998?
It predicted, like, reality television shows.
Yeah, to the extent it did, yes. Yeah. It's a satire of early reality TV.
Also,
we just go
question for you. We were talking about this beforehand. So he's had sex, right?
Yes.
I assume so.
Yes, they cut to the curtains. They explicitly stay.
Is that prostitution?
No, it's porn.
he doesn't know. It's he's not acting in it though. He's, you know, he's not being paid for it.
Okay.
So if that's the case,
you're right.
He's the prostitute.
So wait, okay. If she's being paid, he is assuming she's consenting. Yeah. She may or may not actually be consenting. Is he consenting in this situation? What are the ethics? So
either she's a prostitute or he's being, a raped sex slave.
Yeah, he's being raped.
So okay. So Harrison, I'm going to say something. The entire point of this movie is to point out it's unethical.
Yeah, I know.
There's no way this could happen in real life.
It kind of does, though. We have 24-hour live streamers now.
Kids are like put on TikTok before they understand what that means?
I guess, but it's not 24/7. I have another question of the same vein for that, right?
Okay.
Between the ages of 13 and 17, Truman was probably doing a lot of things that most teenage boys do. They cut to the curtains. What do you mean by that? Because I've watched this movie 3 times and I don't think I follow fully.
When the two dudes in the warehouse are watching it and they're about to have... When they have sex to try and make the baby, they keep saying, well, they always cut to the curtains in the wind. You never see anything. So I'm assuming in his teenage years when he was masturbating all over the place...
Yeah.
Because
otherwise it'd be child porn.
They cut to the curtains.
Yeah.
I think the most...
Or they... cut to the screen, the graphic.
Okay.
See, I don't think the most unrealistic thing is the ethics of the situation. It's the cost. Yes. There's no way. Yes. Television shows are a very small margin often. Like you can make a lot of profit if you have a very cheap show.
Yes.
But like a good production show, like it's like with movies, it's a struggle to make a profit. The idea that this show is making enough money to support it is insane.
Well, I think the idea is that everyone is watching it.
It's the satire of reality TV before reality TV was huge.
Yeah,
and I think that's the most unreal. There's no way you could sustain an audience that would allow you to construct an entire village and hire everyone that's in that village. I guess that shows because it starts falling apart.
See, it's my thing with this movie is the things that this movie in order for me to understand the deep love people have for this, I kind of have to remember that it was made in 1998. And the things that it was saying were profound for 1998. Unfortunately, we live in a post Jersey Shore, two girls, one cup reality. Like we live in the world of Twitch stream.
Bum fights has come and gone.
Yeah, Girls Gone Wild.
You ever watch Bum Fights?
Like
no,
bumfights.com.
But I do remember watching the episode of Dr. Phil where the Bum Fights guy was on it because it's a fucking hilarious.
And he dresses up as Dr. Phil.
Yeah,
it was unblocked in our school. We watch so much Bum Fights.
But like that Dr. Phil episode, like it's the ridiculousness of daytime or just reality TV or Twitch stream or whatever, like those lifestyle, whatever. Like we have now gotten past the point of ridiculousness that
we have to do MILF Manor to get a reaction.
Yes, basically. And like
I'm the man who want, as I've said before, my biggest failing in life is that I was not the man who created MILF Manor. God, I wish I was the man who created MILF Manor. I wish that was my career. I wish I made shows like MILF Manor.
Are you familiar with MILF Manor? Wants to be Kristoff.
Nope, not even a little bit.
Okay. So MILF Manor.
Yeah.
They bring in, let's pick a number, 8. They bring in 8 young men. In 20s. And then 8 women in their late 40s to late 50s.
They're mothers.
Actual MILFs. Well, got it.
Yes. But then you find out that all of the MILFs are the mothers to one of the 8 young
what
boys.
What the fuck?
Yes. So
you can see like your mom like whipped cream off another guy's abs and stuff. At one point they fucked up and put a mom and her son on the same date.
Yeah. See, we live in that world now. So what the Truman Show has to say about reality TV is kind of quaint. Like, I don't care
also
anymore.
We discussed it. We're just not Jim Carrey fans.
He's fine. Yeah, he's not my... Yeah. I find him relatively annoying. Here's... when he's good...
He's really good.
He's really good.
Okay.
Whenever I hear Jim Carrey is in a movie, I do not want to watch that movie.
What is your guys' favorite Jim Carrey movie? Mine's Ace Ventura.
Sure. Solid.
Yeah.
Good Sonic the Hedgehog, because it's gamer's roots.
That's the Jack Black answer.
No, that's Gamer's Roots.
I don't know what Gamer's Roots is.
Do you know what Roots
Sonic
is?
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Do you not know what Roots is?
So Roots is a book turned into a miniseries.
No idea.
About slaves in this one family. It's very famous for a whipping scene where the white man is whipping Kunta Kinte, saying, "Your name is Toby." And he goes, "My name is Kunta Kinte." No, whatch, your name is Toby. And
it's a big cultural moment in America.
Yeah, it's. I'm trying to explain it without giving. I mean, I already gave the most, but that scene is parodied a lot.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that it's from the slavery book,
and it's kind of this big touchstone, some of the first like major representation of the plight of the African American.
Yeah.
In media,
yes.
Like how Sonic is the first plight of the gamer in America.
So whenever he calls Sonic the Hedgehog Gamer's Roots, I imagine Dr. Eggman being like, "Your name is Tails."
Your name is Tails.
No, my name is Miles Prower. Your name is Tails. So what this, by the way, I don't know, I'm going to say, it's the annoying film school answer, but it's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
I've never seen it.
It is a movie that I think is very, very good. That's another one of my controversial opinions, is that some people think that movie is, like, perfect. I think that it is a very clever movie, executed cleverly, that is not as clever as it thinks it is.
I like any movie that simps over women.
One of the things that really pisses me off about this movie is, I forget the showrunner's name.
Christoph.
You know
He's
what?
Such... Go ahead.
A Christmas Carol. The CGI A Christmas Carol is my favorite take. Jim
I can't with
movie.
This.
Insane take.
I saw that in theaters.
I know.
The ticket for that movie is in this apartment.
That's insane.
That's amazing. So, Christoph, your thoughts. Christoph,
it probably would have gone better for longer if he paid people to live in a manufactured town, rather than choreograph and control every single step.
Sure.
But he's such a control freak that he needs... Like there's that one scene where right before Truman stands the corner, literally everybody's in an exact spot, and then they start walking and driving their cars.
I think also the issue is that it would be very hard to get enough people to live in a dome town for, like, 30... potentially their entire lives.
It's... Yes. The Truman Show is basically what the last 40 minutes of Synecdoche, New York was trying to do.
Yeah.
Have you seen that movie?
No, but I've listened to the episode and have no idea what happens in it.
It's a perfect movie.
It's a perfect
it's
movie.
It's a perfect movie.
The house is on fire.
So, yeah. Also, first off, I've seen the movie. It's a perfect movie. I have no idea what happens in it.
Okay, cool.
I do, but I'm not telling.
Yeah. The last hour of that movie, let's pretend, that last 40 minutes to an hour of that movie, he is making a play that's the greatest bit of submersive theater of all time, where the play become like mirrors real life in such a way that the play becomes real life and bleeds into everything.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yes, it does. I promise you're gonna watch it and it's gonna make perfect
sense.
Well,
there's a person playing him. There's a person playing a guy who's playing him.
Yes.
And they're all writing the play.
He's writing the play as his life is happening.
And then someone behind him is in the play is doing that. Then someone in that is playing the person that is doing him.
Yes.
It's Russian nesting dolls?
No.
No, because the play's his life, right?
Yeah.
So you need someone playing him. But in his life, he is someone playing him. So they need someone to play the person who's playing him, because that's a part of his life.
There's the actor.
Okay.
So there's an actor who is playing Philip Seymour Hoffman's part. And then there's an actor playing the actor who is playing Philip Seymour Hoffman's part. Because in the real world, there's an actor playing Philip Seymour Hoffman's part. And so in the universe of the play that mirrors reality to the point where it blurs the line of reality, there is an actor playing the actor playing Philip Seymour Hoffman. So the Truman Show is what he was actually trying to do.
Yeah.
But rather than being self-loathing and self-destructive, he was unethical. And just like...
And didn't fuck nearly as many women.
No.
So you know how people like to act like Inception is this endlessly complicated film?
Sure.
It's not hard to follow.
Yeah, he's not dreaming in the end.
Exactly. It's not a hard to follow movie. I understood what was going on the entire time the first time
so
I watched it.
You had to be that really young when it first...
12?
No,
you're 2004, so you would have been 8. Okay. No, you would have been 6.
I was probably 16 when I watched it in real life.
So
I was high. I was in high school when it came out. But like when it came out, all the discussion, and this would have driven you nuts, as it drove me nuts, was he dreaming in the end? Like everyone was insane over it, and I'm just over there screaming, the top wobbles.
Yeah.
So the top is the totem. It never wobbles in the dream. So he is not dreaming. However, there's also the ring theory, which also lines up that he isn't dreaming. In no world is he dreaming here. And like, buddy, the top. No, that's just supposed to represent that he doesn't care anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen Inception. It's the originally this podcast. Well, it had the same premise, but originally this podcast was going to be called Wait, You Haven't Seen. And it was going to be more like defined movies as opposed to just random happenstance.
Yeah.
And Inception was one of the movies that was going to be immediately on the list. But we have slightly tweaked the podcast and now it's just going to put on like it's been postponed indefinitely until he decides.
Until I decide.
Because I'm never going to watch it. I don't care. It's truly, I don't care.
It's a good movie.
I don't remember the director's name.
Christopher Nolan.
Okay, so it is not Christopher Nolan's best work. And it is the actor's DiCaprio, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it is not DiCaprio's best work.
Well, sure.
Yeah, so DiCaprio's best work is
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I was going to say Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Calvin Candy from Django.
Yeah.
I can't say I disagree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it's a fun movie. It's one I really like Tom Hardy in it.
I'm going to get the cat's going to, I mean, I said this later. The cat's out of the bag. I like this movie. It's fine. It also just kind of exists. It's not prestige-y enough for me to be like impressed by its prestiginess, but it's also not fun.
It's such a part of our culture now. I mean, like, as I was saying, the Truman Syndrome's a thing.
Yeah. Have you seen Gerard Carmichael's reality show?
No.
It's literally called Gerard Carmichael Reality Show.
Okay.
So it's basically what if a man Truman showed himself? Like,
I think you've explained this to me.
And it's kind of a disaster and kind of brilliant. And it is both in equal measure. That show, I think, says the same things the Truman Show is saying better because it's real.
I mean, I'm gonna take some heat off of you here. I feel like it's part of my job on the podcast is to be the hot take bodyguard. Because Harrison's a good boy and deserves not to be bullied. So every so often I have to come out and say, "Good night, Mr. President," and say something wilder than I actually believe. Jim Carrey movies, I feel the same way about The Mask.
Okay.
I think Son of the Mask is better.
Fascinating.
I like Son of the Mask a lot more than I like The Mask.
I don't like either of those movies, and I don't think I agree with you, but I don't like either of those movies.
When I was 4 years old, The Mask was my favorite movie, and after my mom died when I was 6, I haven't seen it since. And now I'm like, should I watch it again?
Might bring her back.
Is that staying in? Is that staying in?
Of course that's staying. Well, that's up to you. Is that staying in?
I'm fine with it. Okay. That's funny as hell.
Of course it's staying in.
I think his mom got Jumanji'd into the mask.
So?
You know, we just got approved for paid ads.
And then the sponsorships will come later.
Hopefully.
I'm hoping to get... I've always wanted a Smucker's one.
Smucker's? Like
the jelly? Yes.
The jelly? Okay.
There's many film projects I worked on where the goal was to get them to pay for it.
My goal in life is to be a Dr. Pepper sponsored comedian.
Yeah, I want Dr. Pepper. I want Florence Pugh.
Well, no. Pay me. Yeah, you just want to be with Florence
Pugh. I just want to be married to Florence Pugh. I want a sponsorship where I marry Florence Pugh.
See, I think the Truman Show is kind of not poignant in the age of the podcast. I think in the age where people are willingly, exposing various information, dispelling, or I guess, anyway, giving out a lot of information about themselves for funsies.
Okay. The amount of content I put out here is possibly more shocking than you would get from the Truman Show.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Okay.
And it's kind of, what ended up happening with like the Big Brother live streams, in that whenever the house guest had sex, you had to cut to somewhere else because you can't show sex, anything. And I'm not saying they should show sex on TV. I'm really not. I'm not a Puritan, but at the same time, I don't want to see that.
If that director had any guts, he'd show Truman boning as soon as he was 18.
Maybe. I'm just saying that. Well, it's not shocking. It's not shocking anymore.
Well, one of the things that is going on in the movie is that they're supposed to be doing the first conception that happens live on air.
Yes.
So I assume they wouldn't cut to the curtain at that point.
No, they'll cut to the curtain.
But then there's not a conception happening.
You can't see conception happen.
Yeah.
Oh, but you can hear it. Or they
make sure it's undercovers.
I see
almost
that.
Fully. It's PG-13 sex.
As someone who tried to make an ethical snuff film, that is the only part of the director's vision I agree with.
I knew you were going to bring that up.
I get it.
Listen.
You just want to do the first school project where someone dies on camera in a very ethical manner.
It was never going to happen, Matthew. Anyway,
yeah,
not the point.
Because everyone in that program lacked the artistic just soul.
The nerve to allow me
to film a terminally dying man. Dying.
So I think the Truman Show would have been better one of two things. One, he leaves the show 45 minutes in, and then the rest of the movie is him living in the real world and the show scrambling how it's going to exist, or him deciding to live in the real world, come back, whatever. But I think him being in the real world 45 minutes in is a far more interesting decision than him walking away at the end. Or man up, kill him off, and then it's a new baby. Go nihilistic. Literally kill Truman and then have a brand new baby be the show.
I mean, this also...
Go full nihilism.
This suffers from what you say, the 15 minutes after the movie. This is... I want to see the movie after this movie.
Yes.
I'm far more interested in watching a man who spent his entire life
yes.
in a choreographed dance have to live in a world where things just fucking happen.
Yes. It is almost always more interesting
to have
the thing that you want to happen early and then deal with the ramifications of that than to cop out and have it happen at the very end and then not have to deal with
the
ramifications.
Can you imagine him seeing 9/11?
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. He'd go back.
If I did the movie, we'd add an extra minutes. He'd walk out and like literally as he comes out, 9/11 happens.
I want to say this at some point. My favorite thing about the movie is that the tone is a tragedy and the mood is a comedy.
Sure.
It is a very sad and traumatic film where you're watching this.
It's a horror movie.
But it's all played off like a joke.
Yes.
And I believe originally it was not supposed to be that. The original creator wanted it to be a pure tragedy. And then I think somebody along the way was like, no, this is funny as hell. We're making this a comedy. And that's why it ended up like that.
Yeah. This movie's a horror movie. It really is.
I think if they went full horror, it'd be better.
Yeah.
Okay.
I am so happy. Very rarely. Normally, this type of shit, he loves this. Like, he loves it way more than I do. Okay. I'm happy that you're kind of on my side here.
Yeah. No, I'm like completely on your side. Like, if they had made this more of a horror film, we would have seen the genesis of like the psychological horror genre
yes.
decades before yep. it happened.
Yeah. Everyone's good in this movie. The actress who plays Sylvia, I forget her name off the top of my head. She's probably the standout. She's my favorite part of this movie.
I have a real hard time with names in movies. Is that his wife or
no? That's the high school fling turned real world caller, where they totally get together after.
Oh, absolutely.
And it falls apart because he doesn't know how to live in a world like now that it doesn't constantly revolve around him. And she will have the patience of a saint for a couple years, and then eventually it will get old.
He's a 30-year-old man who's never had any adversity that wasn't prescribed.
That's the thing, yes.
I mean, you're right.
He kills himself. You're right. He ends up fucking killing himself.
He kills himself on Idol. He gets a job at the World Trade Center.
Well...
He jumps out the window.
Steve Buscemi drags his corpse out of the ash.
What?
Steve Buscemi,
yeah, Steve Buscemi was a New York fireman. Well, he was a New York fireman before 9/11, and then he re-enlisted for a few months after.
Oh, okay. I was going to be like, does that mean that Steve Buscemi and Pete Davidson's dad may have been on
they
the
knew,
same...
Yeah, they probably knew each other.
Like, the first time he gets a paycheck, and it's not enough.
Yeah, that's... Well, here's the thing. It's 1998. Depending on a bunch of stuff, he might... I mean, he does have... has worked in insurance, and that would pay okay. He could get a job selling insurance
again. The bubble is coming so close, though.
But the
Great Recession is right around the corner.
We're about a decade from its worst, though. Like, it didn't... Like, it was bad in, like, 04. It didn't really hit its peak until, like, 07. So he has a few years yet.
If he didn't make it out, would the entire thing have fallen apart in 2008?
The show?
Yeah.
I mean, probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
They probably couldn't afford to keep making it.
Yeah.
Or it would have made even more money because people needed their comfort show.
Oh, shit.
It becomes like a recession pop thing.
Yeah. The fact that it...
There's another movie where it becomes like a Jurassic Park movie where he has to survive in a collapsing dome city.
Yeah.
As the money's just pulled one day.
Okay. I do have a question from the Catholic and the Protestant perspective.
Sure. Yeah.
Does crossing your fingers for marriage count? Like, does God just be like, no, that's not a real marriage. She crossed her fingers.
Is he Catholic?
I'm assuming so. I'm assuming he is Catholic. And I'm assuming she is Catholic for pay.
Yeah.
Was she confirmed?
That, I mean, she's a main character eventually.
Did she get, like, first communion?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Does God only recognize Catholic weddings?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Everything that isn't Catholic isn't real, and God doesn't care about it because the Pope.
Let's assume they are both Catholic.
Yeah.
Let's assume she's Catholic in real life and in the show.
Yeah. It's binding.
She crosses her finger. It's still binding. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it doesn't matter what you do. The priest is using his spiritual authority to make it so.
Now, what if they didn't actually get a real priest and he's just pretending to be a
priest? Then it's not a real marriage.
Okay.
Well, it's not a real marriage. Literally, it's not a real marriage. Like,
I'm just saying,
he's not living a real life.
I'm just saying, if a Catholic priest doesn't do the marriage, it's not real.
I know. his entire existence is fake. He's technically speaking not a real person.
To answer your question accurately, though,
he exists.
If they sign the marriage certificate and it's an actual legal authority, then it's a legally binding marriage.
Yes.
Okay.
You can't cross your fingers signing a contract.
Yeah. Like, in the eyes of God, though.
Well, I don't think she cares about the legality of it. I think she just doesn't want to marry him for real in the eyes of God. I think that's why.
I assume she has, like, a husband offset, and she wanted to leave that option open.
Yeah. Also, their marriage certificate is probably fake. It was probably a fake minister or priest.
It wasn't a person like me who can make these things legal.
Wait, you can?
Yeah. I'm certified by the state of Ohio.
Yeah. You didn't know that? Yeah.
No.
I got it. Then I'm like, fuck, I have to get Pennsylvania in case I have gay friends that want to get married. And then, like, the next day they legalized it, like, everywhere. And I said, everything works out for me.
So, okay.
Matthew, in Catholicism, is being gay okay?
I think the Pope said it's not as bad as it used to be.
But he didn't say that from his chair, I thought.
He doesn't have to say it from his chair.
Okay.
So he doesn't sit in a chair and it gives him power. The whatever the Pope says is reflected in heaven. As on earth, so shall it be in heaven, dogma.
But I thought he had to say it from his special chair.
No.
Okay.
It depends on what Catholic you ask.
Yeah, it depends. What Catholic you ask. Strictly speaking, if the Pope says something with certainty, it's dogma.
Now, can he go back on what he says?
Oh, yeah. Throughout history, they have. Constantly.
Yeah.
Okay. But no, being...
Your religion is very malleable.
Being...
You're just not allowed to change it.
Well, only the Pope is. Being gay, you shouldn't hate or kill those people, but they are probably going to hell, I think, is the current situation.
Do you believe that?
I'm not a practicing Catholic, but yes.
Fair.
Okay.
So, I love that he says things like, I'm not a practicing Catholic, and then, like, fully believes that his Catholicism is, like, the prime dogma of the
world.
It
is the only correct and good religion.
But he doesn't practice it.
That means, Matthew, you do
realize I don't make music. I can tell what's good music.
You can tell what music you like, sure.
But, Matthew, you do realize that under that worldview, you are going to hell.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a
narcissist with a personality, like socio-personality disorder. Of course I'm going to hell. I lie to kids for fun, yeah.
Are you a Catholic at that point?
Well, I don't believe in hell, so.
Okay.
Under the Catholic idea, I don't believe in God and hell. The thing about Catholicism... The thing about Catholicism, much like the thing about like Judaism, is that whether or not you believe in it later in life, it shapes you as a person.
Yeah.
In a very, very deep way.
Yes.
Because they are very intense ritualistic religions.
Okay.
So someone who was raised Catholic might not believe in God or Jesus, whatever, but they still have a worldview that is defined by their Catholic upbringing.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. He mentioned earlier, it's why a lot of occultists used to be Catholic, because it's a religious system and a worldview where magical thinking is still built in.
Are you leaving that in?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Listen, he can insult my worldview all the time.
He does
it all the time. And, like, I can insult his worldview all the time. Like, morally speaking, the voice is saying the same thing. It doesn't matter if it's coming from the same place. Also, I said all
the time that the reason that most occultists were Catholic is it sets you up for a world where magic is real, the devil is a physical entity, and lighting candles does things.
Yeah.
You bury a small stone man in your backyard to sell your house better in Catholicism.
It's also why a lot of Catholics fall for... same with Mormons. But it's why a lot of them fall for conspiracy theories. Like, so easily. Because it is a magical worldview that is constantly changing based on whoever happens to be in charge at any given point in time. And so you're much more susceptible to falling for, like... Ridiculous is the wrong word, but it's the word that I'm going to use. Like, you're more willing to fall for ridiculous information. Because, like, you're... worldview that you were brought up with is magical and fantastic.
Catholicism because like every religion affects you, it's how you're grown and stuff, but Catholicism as a religion compared to like any Protestant religion affects your worldview far deeper. There's far more things and constructs and restrictions put into it.
I mostly agree with him. I went to church school for 13 years, and so I went to church 5-6 days a week for 13 years. I truly think that fundamentally, like, our church structure was very similar. Now, I also think that, like, it's because I went 6 days a week.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that it's because I grew up Protestant. I think it's because I grew up in a system where it was everything for the entirety of my most malleable years.
I went twice a week from, like, a very early age. I forget when I started. With the whole goal of it's not just to learn about God. The whole goal is that you're going through the sacraments so you will get confirmed and get your confirmation name. It's a system it's an induction system. You're being inducted into the mysteries of this secret cult. which is how Christianity started, was it's one of the secret cults of Rome.
Yes.
Or the mystery cults, or whatever the official term is for it.
And it's why a lot of them fall for conspiracy theories, is because the Pope being a cultish figure, you're much more susceptible to falling for other cult-like figures.
And the Pope is telling you that the sacrament is the body and blood of Christ. It's not a metaphor.
Yes. That's the biggest difference in our belief system.
It's
a metaphor to me.
I saw a miracle every week. The priest called upon God and the Holy Spirit every week to perform the miracle of transubstantiation and transform bread and wine into the actual literal blood and body of Christ.
Yes.
Could you do that?
In an emergency situation.
An emergency situation.
Oh, if someone is dying and he needs to give them their last communion, yes.
Oh.
Any Catholic can perform transubstantiation. I didn't mean to speak for you. Any Catholic can perform transubstantiation. Say you're hiking Mount Everest and you're dying near the top and you're not going to make it down. And a man needs to get his last communion to go to heaven. You then are allowed to perform that last communion, and it is sanctified and honored in the eyes of God.
Yeah.
What are the rules? I know we're very off topic at this point. What are the rules for the emergency last communion? Like, can you turn a Snickers bar into the flesh of Christ?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. What you have on you. It's,
okay.
Yeah. It's the blood and wine, what you have on you as the body and blood
God
of Christ.
God is an angry, vengeful God who you're fearful of, but he's not gonna leave you in a lurch. Like, whatever you have, he'll make do. As long as it's done in good faith.
Because
he's not going to be like, you go to hell because of pure fucking happenstance.
You
go to hell because you jack off, not because you die in Mount Everest.
Okay, I think I follow.
So the Truman Show. Or do you want to keep having this conversation?
No, we should go back to the Truman Show.
I remember I pitched a show, we just explained things to Joe.
We want to do that.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, maybe this is the unofficial pilot for that show.
I'm fine with that. So, yeah, if we want to do other shows, I'm fine with
this
that.
This fits thematically. Truman's living in a Catholic-esque world.
Okay, so I do have some other things I want to touch on.
Please.
How do we feel about Truman's wife?
She's an actress playing a part.
Hit her.
Would you say?
I'd hit that.
That's not the question I was asking.
That is the question you were asking.
I think that I have no empathy for her when Truman turns violent and almost attacks her and almost kills her. Because she continued. You might think I'm crazy for saying that. She continuously keeps this man under like she has no problem with what she's doing. You can very clearly tell.
Yeah.
Also, like, under like extra things that happened when the movie came out, you learn that she made more money off of this than Christoph just by writing books about it.
Sure.
So she's extraordinarily wealthy. So she continues to stay on because of the money it's given her, not because of any other reason. That's why she doesn't like even try to tell Truman.
I have no empathy for straight men, so.
You have no empathy for straight men?
I don't have empathy for a lot of people.
Who's to say Truman is straight? He didn't even get to pick his love interest.
Well, he did. She just told him that he lived in a fake world and was captured by the fake FBI showrunners.
That scene pisses me off because it is such a horrible confession.
Yeah, I'm aware.
She does such a horrible job. It conveys nothing.
There's no
nothing.
Good way
she
you
just
do that.
Looks crazy.
There's no situation in which you don't look crazy.
Even if you could literally say this is a television show.
Like, yo, you could be in a television show right now. Your whole life could be a television show right now. And I'm getting in a lot of trouble because I keep making fun of you because I think it's really funny and it's not your fault. But I'm going to keep doing it because me and Harrison and everyone else in your life are fucking union. And if they think that I'm pushing the boundaries of what's acceptable to keep your reality coherent and believable to you, well, they can take that up with a union rep.
Wait, so in the show that I'm living in, the other actors have union reps?
Well, we all do, but we don't because it's not a show.
Is there anybody that like looks out for my rights?
I'm assuming every actor in that movie, much like in the real world, is unionized. Yeah.
We're all part of SAG.
I'm assuming every one of those actors is a SAG after a member.
But yeah, so like imagine your whole life's a television show, which it's not. But like imagine it. is, right?
It totally isn't.
It totally isn't. Right? Like, I didn't know that your girlfriend was gonna, you and her were gonna, like, start dating. Like, that was about to happen, like, weeks before it happened. But if it was, and then someone, I don't know, someone at work comes up to you and's like, hey, man, your life's a fucking television show. Like, they could explain it in exquisite detail about how, like, your mom's contract ran out, all this stuff happened. It's why you don't know a ton of stuff. You wouldn't believe them. Thank God, because I need a paycheck.
Yeah,
in this
scenario, we're telling you right now that your life is a television show, and you don't believe us.
Well, okay. So the thing is, the thing is, would I be an idiot for not believing you?
It'd be insane for you too.
Yeah, you're. You listen, unless you had provable facts in the way that Truman does, because Christoff messes up and he just has all these actors act in a loop instead of just living life. But right.
If you had a showrunner that like paid their actors very well for their time and actually made it more of an immersive improv experience, which was very nice for the actors, because the idea of watching like the Truman Show, which in this hypothetical scenario perhaps led to the current show that you're a part of, and like that's not the way to do it. But if you had a more realistic living situation where people can go off script and sometimes get in trouble for it, you wouldn't have that facts there.
Yeah, and I may or may not be a union steward, like making sure that he is okay and like overwatching everything he is saying right now. See, like right now, he's in a weird yellow, like a yellow light area, but he hasn't quite said anything to like fully.
And really, if I was in this yellow light area, I'd be fine because of all the people online who are huge fans of me, and I'd really thank them for that. I'd be like thankful for that.
So does that mean my girlfriend is only here to keep me complacent and not think about things too hard?
In the Truman Show, yes. In this real show, I would real like Joe? To in the Joe Show.
Yeah,
I would like to believe that she has fallen for you for real. Originally,
was it because it was like people are like, this is getting kind of sad, maybe. But
okay. All right. And the thing is like, if somebody told me, yeah, no, Matthew is not real. He's a paid actor.
He stopped working with you because he got another job opportunity and needed more free time.
Right. And if you told me that, I'd be like, yeah, you know what? That makes sense. Matthew doesn't seem like a real person a lot of the time.
It seems like he'd get in a lot of trouble with unions.
Yeah, but if you told me, like,
and producers,
my closest friends or my parents or my girlfriend were paid actors, I'd be like, I don't know. I don't know about that.
They don't seem like people who have to go to HR all the time. They don't have to go to HR. They don't have to have to talk to the directors. Other actors don't yell at them. That seems like the kind of people they are.
You guys are going to get in so much trouble after this. I'm going to walk out of the building, and they're going to come out from behind the walls, and they're going to be like, you guys are fucking crazy.
So when I don't show up to work on Monday, just know that I got moved to another department. So,
but you're the union steward, so they can't fire you.
They can't fire me.
Yeah.
But I will be moved to a different, I'll be moved to
in this hypothetical situation.
Yeah.
right. Of course.
Yeah, I have a thing. And like, I'll probably stay on because I have some power in the television industry because of a marriage. Like, keep alluding to wanting because I'm actually in it.
Yes. Do you have any, have you said everything you need to say? Do you have any final thoughts or any not final thoughts? Like, do you have any?
So I do have some things I still want to talk about. We've just gotten off topic so much. So
it's a problem with improv.
Wait, what?
No.
Okay. My job as a host is to reel him in.
Yeah.
And sometimes I don't feel like doing that.
And your job as the union steward is to make sure he doesn't go too far.
Yes, he hasn't yet. Don't worry.
Okay, cool. Anyways, there's a lot of cut material. I think the biggest thing is that that they definitely shouldn't have cut out is Marlin is a much like more sympathetic for Truman's situation than is let on in the movie.
See, I think he's very sympathetic in the movie.
It seems like it's his only real relationship to some extent. And that's because they met when they were seven.
Yes.
Like he's kind of a part of this thing too. Not on the same level as Truman, but like he's kind of like this is right.
It's a big part of his life.
Right.
Like how you'd be a big part of Tabby's life.
Exactly. But there's after his dad breaks
so
on the set,
texts right now.
I guess they'll do this thing where sometimes they'll get with all the main cast and they'll talk directly with Christoph about what the plans are moving forward. Sure. And this is something that is done like live on air.
Okay.
And there is a moment where he says, we're going to do the first conception ever done live on air. And then at the point in which Truman's son is born, we're going to switch over to a double network show. So on one network, they'll follow Truman. On the other network, they'll follow Truman's son. And when he says this, Marlin says, and what happens when Truman dies? Does it go back to being a single network show? And then Christoph signs off. Like, it's live on air. He doesn't want to talk about that.
Yeah.
And I think that it's something that they don't really show that Marlin is, like, on his side as much as he can be.
Yeah.
Given the situation.
He feels bad reading the lines. Like, you can tell when he's being fed the lines.
Yeah.
And he has that break. Yeah. Like, that pause before he says, the last thing I would ever do was lie to you. Like, he has that thing where it's like, do I want to say it? Like,
yeah.
This is my job, but is it my duty?
Yeah. Also, when do you guys think that Truman figures it out?
Radio.
Radio.
I think that's the moment where it's like, something's wrong. I don't fully think he thinks it's a television show until in the car on the loop. I think that's the moment he thinks that it's a television show, or not specific, or that it's about him. That, like, everything in this world is about him.
Yeah.
But I think the radio is when he, where it breaks, where it's like, my entire life is a lie.
Should have been when the light fell, honestly. But
you know when I think it is?
What?
I think it's before the movie starts.
Okay.
And he's continuing to play this role, pushing his limits to see, like, how far are they willing to go with this lie. And maybe it's not even like he fully knows, but he's like onto it.
I would agree with you if his spiral wasn't as much as it was.
But I don't think it's an actual spiral. I think it's him pushing.
Okay.
I think it's him show, like, he's like, okay, well, what happens if I don't go into work now?
Sure.
And I just walk into a random building.
Okay.
And then he saw the people behind the elevator. What happens if I walk into traffic and put my pants out and stop all the cars? Like, are they still going to run me over? And I think the entire movie is just that.
Yeah. I think the cars thing is a stupid way to test the world, because in the real world, cars would stop.
Yeah.
Or they would at least attempt to.
Yeah.
Or they'd write something to the contract that, you know, you get hit by a car, that's okay.
Yeah.
Right.
That actor would not be liable.
Right. Because,
yeah, like, if we were going to make an entire show about someone's life, like, we'd all sign things that if we accidentally kill them, we're fine.
Yeah.
So, the reason why I say this, though, is because of his catchphrase. People in real life don't have catchphrases.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they do.
They say things.
I knew a guy who literally would say something, then go whackety schmackety doo.
That's not real.
It's like when and I are like, are we living, laughing, loving Creed?
How many times did someone say, how are you doing? I go, living, laughing, loving.
Yeah,
or living the dream.
Or like when something happens and I just go, hell yeah.
I guess.
People have their go-to phrases.
What's my,
and what? Especially if you have like a specific interaction with someone.
I guess I see that.
Yeah, that actually is a very realistic part of the world.
You know what?
When I used to go to my friend's dorms in college, I called up to come and get the door, and I would say a line, and then they would say the line back, and we did that every phone call.
Yeah.
I do also want to point out that when he goes, it's at some point in the movie, he says he's going to go to Fuji, and he tries to get on the boat, right?
He tries to get on the plane to Fiji. There are no anything. Then he tries to get on the bus, and the bus breaks down. And then in the very, very beginning.
Yes.
No, that's not to get to Fiji. That's because he was given a file to go across for some client.
Oh, okay. But he comes back.
Yes, because he's afraid of water.
And it cuts to him doing gardening work.
Yes.
Right in the same spot that the hole is in at the end of the movie.
Yes.
And I think that is, like, the biggest key, where he's already beginning to plan something.
Okay.
Obviously, I could be wrong.
That's fair. See, I think it's more of a Andy Dufresne Shawshank thing, where he realizes, oh, this is a thing that I can do more, but they just don't show the full extent of what he does.
Yeah.
But no, that's very interesting theory. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Now, is Truman intelligent, or is he paranoid and just got right?
He's paranoid and just got right.
Because there's even this moment at the very end when he reaches the wall.
Yes.
And he touches it.
Yes.
And I think that is meant to display, up until that moment, there was still a certain level of doubt. Where he's like, maybe this is all real. Maybe this isn't actually manufactured. And I think he hits that moment and he's like, no, I know this isn't real.
Sure.
And
I think the movie would be more interesting if that happened 40 minutes in.
So originally there was a scene that happens directly after he leaves.
Yeah.
And I believe you can find the script for that scene. And it there's like this weird face off with Christoph. And from what I've heard, the scene is extremely corny. Where, like, it just doesn't land well. So they decide to just cut the entire thing from the movie.
Sure.
I also think the time period is weird. Because it seems like it's supposed to be, like, 50s, 60s.
It wants to be the 50s, 60s. It looks like it's the 90s. Like, it's...
Yeah.
Well, that's just because that's the most recognizable Americana.
It is Americana.
It's trying to recreate modern Americana more than I think it's trying to be set in the 50s. I think the show just wants to feel like a The Wonder Years type thing.
I think that's most things. I really like the movie.
I liked it.
I'd call it a 7 out of 10.
Sure, same.
You'd probably.
Same.
Okay, same. I don't know. I like other Jim Carrey movies more.
Yes.
And it is a little absurdist, but I think the commentary, and especially the idea of making a movie that is tonally and mood, like, they're completely opposite. And I think it's fascinating.
I like this movie. It was far more poignant and important when it came out. And unfortunately, I think that it either... it didn't create the modern world of media we view, but it predicted a world that happened that is so much more extreme, in that I think the things that it is trying to say feel trite.
Yeah. It's quaint.
Yes, the movie feels quaint because of the modern media landscape we live in. But I can imagine watching this movie in 1998 and thinking it's like a brilliant, profound... Well, yeah,
it's the same thing as seeing like a movie that was seen as like risque, it's sexy from like the 50s.
Sure.
And you're like... we as a culture have moved past that.
Yeah. I'm fine with that being final thoughts. Yeah. I mean, unless you have anything you really want to...
I don't think so.
All right. I'm good calling it there. You good? Do you want to do socials?
I can do socials. If you want to send us... still awaiting an X reader. Still awaiting an X... You know, I'll raise it to $15. Raising the bounty on these X readers. Cora X reader... really, any woman from any movie we've seen.
Cora,
but you specifically want Cora, Mary Sinners, and Velma from Chicago.
Yes, specifically those ones. Maybe 20 for those if it's really good. That's twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com.
How about 1995?
I'll send you $19.95 if you write me a really good fanfic for any of those three characters, X-Reader. Or X-Matthew, you're getting the standard rate. I want a true X-Reader because then I want to be able to share it with the world.
Yeah.
If you want to find me and my small little wee men, or I guess in the near future, see my sheer terror at having to ride a boat, a Midwest underscore magician, you can find us on YouTube at twomenandamoviepodcast.com. You can find the show at 2NMoviePodcast on Instagram.
Nice. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and
nice
Lemonade.
Nice is a catchphrase for you.
Probably. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Threads, and Lemonade at harrisonpoole.com. 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 You can follow me on Letterboxd at HDPOOLE124. Socials, anything you want to plug?
No, I'm okay.
you don't want people to follow you online and hear your thoughts.
I hardly
assuming they don't
online.
Already
I
do.
Assuming you don't already live in a Truman Show-esque world.
Yeah, they're already gonna know.
Okay.
They already know everything they need to know. That's it.
Cool. I mean, tune in next week for, I think it's my brother and he's bringing the Green Knight. We got a really good lineup for August. Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme music. Make sure you check out his bands, Natural Health and Tonight with Vince. Thank you guys for listening. I think that's all I have to say. So long and good night.
Hugs and kisses.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.